Hello, and welcome to Sounding Out with Izzy, the podcast where we have conversations with musicians, music producers, publicists, live promoters, zine makers, journalists, and more about their experiences working in the music industry as women, non-binary, and queer people. I'm your host, Isabel Korp, the founder of the queer femme music-based blog and YouTube channel, A Girl's Two Sound Sense. Drielli S. Carter is one of the most sought-after photographers in the art world, with an extensive portfolio spanning fashion, music, and documentaries. Just a few of her more notable clients in music include Yves Tumor, Orville Peck, Billie Eilish, Rosalia, Kanye West, Pharrell, Vince Staples, The Flaming Lips, and a little-known up-and-comer you might have heard of before called Beyoncé. Drielli photographed Sunflower Bean's latest album cover, and I met her at their New York release Q&A hosted by Rough Trade. It was an honor and a privilege to have Drielli on the podcast, as she rarely gives interviews. And her fervent, all-consuming passion for music was contagious. I think I finally met someone who rambles more about Brian Eno and the Modern Lovers than I do, and that's saying something. So it was so wonderful to get to ramble together. As usual, I would like to remind listeners that I am paying for the podcast out of pocket. So if you would like to help me continue to create more episodes, and maybe buy me a coffee as well, please consider donating to or checking out my Patreon at patreon.com/agirls2soundsense. That's girl with three R's and no I. Those who join my Patreon will get to unlock bonus content, including music-based film reviews with special guests, unheard and unedited conversations in podcast episodes, playlists curated by yours truly, as well as early access to some of my YouTube content. However, I understand that finances are tight for many people, so if you are unable to join the Patreon, I fully understand. All I ask is that you give the podcast a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts, as that really helps me out in my effort to get the podcast in front of more people. And without further ado, let's get right into this episode. Who are you and what do you do?
Yes, my name is Drielli and I am a photographer from Brazil. And I've been living in New York now since I was 18. I am 33 years old now. And I've been shooting full-time as a freelancer since I was 25. And before that, like, I just shot, but I wasn't really like technically a freelancer. So like, I didn't make a living off of shooting. So I don't consider that as like my professional years just yet. I'm like a mess. I'm so tired. I feel like disgusting and miserable. I haven't had a chance to shower or anything yet.
Well, you look pretty put together, honestly.
Oh my God. My hair is disgusting. I literally just put a hat on. I'm on deadline. So I've been up all night, basically.
Ooh, what's the deadline for?
Oh, I can say it.
Oh, you're under a contract. Even more exciting. Okay.
Yeah, I feel like this week's going to be rough because I'm on a weird night schedule. I have shoots literally every night this week. So starting tonight up until the 20th. And I feel like it's going to be a crazy, today is going to be crazy, especially because I'm so tired.
Oh, I bet. Yeah, you're in high demand. You're very popular.
Oh my God, I wish. I feel you're like I'm not really online or anything these days. So it's one of those things that like, if you know, you know. You know what I mean? Like I get a lot of work from word to mouth recommendation, which I guess is not a bad way to get work.
Right. I remember seeing you do the talk on the panel with Sunflower Bean for the Head Full of Sugar release at Rough Trade. And just the passion and the fervor and just like the humor that you spoke with was just like so infectious. I immediately was like, oh, she needs to be on the podcast. And so I'm so excited that you're here. And
Thank you for having me. I listened to the episode you did with Cindy Lee, and I love Cindy's work so much. So I felt like if this is good for Cindy, I'm happy to also make time and, you know, talk and do all of that.
Absolutely. And I appreciate you being able to squeeze me into your schedule as well. So I wanted to ask you about the significance music has had on your life. And so who were your biggest like musical heroes as a kid? And who were some of your biggest musical heroes now?
Ooh, that's a good question. I mean, I always say that like, I sincerely, truthfully like think that music is the highest form of art, like more than any other art discipline or artistic practice. I genuinely think music is the supreme art form. You know, to be a director, you need so many things in place to make a movie. You need a huge team of people. And to take photos, you need a camera and you need, you know, you need equipment, you need things like that. And you will never also hear anybody saying like, oh, this photograph saved my life tonight. But you always hear somebody saying like, oh, this song, this music quite literally saved my life tonight. You can't really say that about painting. You can't really say that about, frankly, like there aren't many art forms that you can say that about. And I think that goes to show just how powerful music is as far as like making a connection with human beings. And beyond that, I also just think you don't need anything to make music and to listen to music. You know, you can literally tap on a table, you can tap on your own body and that produces sounds and that is music. Or if you want to take it even a step ahead and like get more conceptual, you have people like John Cage and like the concept like 4 minutes and 33 seconds, which, you know, he goes on to say how there is no silence. There is only philosophical silence in the abstract poetic sense of silence. But like if you are put into, you know, a sound chamber, you still hear the sound of your nervous system and of your blood going through your body. That is also music. If you go outside, the sound of the street, that is music. You could be humming a song anywhere. I just think music truly is the supreme art form. There's nothing that compares and that can connect human beings from different places who don't even speak the same language, who are not from the same culture, and still find this like common ground. And I think music is that thing. So I'm super jealous of musicians. I've always liked really weird artists. Like I definitely always been attracted to people who were contrarians and, you know, kind of went against the grain. And perhaps you can say that they're all mentally ill and unhinged or whatever you want to call it. I definitely also think there's like a common thread, a common line between like mental instability, or I wouldn't even call it illness, but just like mental things and creativity and music and the way that we are so sensible that we're able to express ourselves. So I think I've always liked the artists who were considered the tormented type of geniuses and the troubled artists and people like that. I remember being like really young and really liking Serge Gainsbourg for whatever reason. And to be honest, I don't even fucking know how in the bubble fucking Brazil I came across something like that in a time before the internet, especially. And I just remember just being like love at first sight, everything about him, what he represented to me. I thought it was fascinating and I thought the music was great. And also he expanded my worldview and my sonic palette of like what music could be. So growing up in Brazil, I actually hated Brazilian music. I gotta say to Tom Zé, which is a Brazilian artist who did like Tropicália and stuff like that, like he fully changed my concepts of what music could be, what it represented, not just in the sonic way, but also in a political way. I think around that age, I was getting really into politics and anarchy. And I spent a lot of time on anarchy forums. And Tone Zé felt like a fucking slap in the face. He has this one album called Todos os Olhos, which translates to All of the Eyes. And it was released in Brazil during the dictatorship. And it has what to me is like the greatest album cover of all time, which is literally an asshole. He managed to get an asshole on a cover and bypass dictatorship. So what he did, they put a little ball on this girl's asshole and they painted it so it looks like an eyeball. So it's called Todos os Olhos, All of the Eyes, which is a reference to the dictatorship watching everything that you're doing. And also in Brazil, we have a slang and like a saying that goes, it doesn't really translate, but it's more or less like the eye of the asshole. Mm-hmm. And, you know, somehow he managed to get all of these things done within one fucking album cover. And it's so bold and it's so ballsy and so in your face. And like, he could have died for that. It could have arrested and tortured this man. And yet here it is, this album cover is still standing. And it's like some of the most beautiful music I've ever heard in my life. And I remember the first time I heard it, I don't know, it literally transformed my life. And I think these days, I think as I got older, like Brian Eno was also another person that, I don't know, blew my fucking little mind. The man is so prolific. He has done so much. And like, even I'm obsessed with Oblique Strategies. I don't know if you've ever seen the little card game. Like I use that in the dark room. And there's not a single project I've ever done where I actually didn't actively use Oblique Strategies as I'm working. And like, it's just incredible that this man still making fucking amazing art to this day. I always joke that like, when I die, I want my ashes scattered to the sound of discrete music, because I think it's like the greatest Brian Eno album of all time. And lately I've been really into this British band, and I'm probably going to say their name wrong, called the Durotti Column. I think Vinny is the guitar player. It's probably the greatest guitar player in the entire world. Like, I can't think of anybody that could even come close to what Vinny can do on a guitar. And it's so understated. It's truly timeless. I think that's the same thing that attracts me like to Brian, you know, people like this. Like, it feels like timeless art. Like, you couldn't place it in a time period. It truly feels that it could be from the future, it could be from the past, it could be from any part of time history, and it still feels unlike anything that's out there. And I think because I've always been attracted to Guy Debord and, you know, Fluxus and the whole psychogeography and like all of that stuff. Touche Jeunesse International. I don't know. I'm probably saying that wrong. I'm probably destroying with my accent. But like, I've always been obsessed with, you know, all of those art movements. And I love that first Durotti album. It's literally a sandpaper cover that is meant to be so abrasive that would destroy your other records. And I think that's such a beautiful stark contrast to this angelical fucking ethereal music that they make. And it's this perfect balance of like abrasive in your face politics and principles and ideals, and also art that is transcendental and is like outside of the scope of anything you could imagine of being magical. And I find that really inspiring. I think like, it, all I ever wanted to do was art that felt this way. And I know my work is nowhere near that, but I can't help but to like still be equally inspired and defeated. Like, I would listen to some of this music and I'm like, oh, I wish I could make photos that look the way that this music sounds. I wish I could make photographs and imagery and visuals that will make people feel the way I feel when I listen to this music. Robert Frank, the photographer, has this incredible quote that I love, which is like, he said, I'm paraphrasing, so I'm probably like a little off, but he says something along the lines of, he wishes people will look at his images and feel the same way he feels when he wants to read a line of a poem twice. Mm-hmm. And I always thought that that was so beautiful. And I think that that's the same way I feel about this music and this art. And I wish I could one day make art that would be just as good as that, even knowing at the same time I can help but look at this shit and be like, what the fuck am I even doing of my life? I should just give up. Like, I'll never be that good. Like, I fucking suck. What am I doing of my life? So it's this constant conflict of like, yeah, I want to fucking do this shit. And like, I would like to one day get there, but maybe I'll never be that good. I'll never get there. All I can do is try.
So I also wanted to ask about working with Sunflower Bean on that album cover, because first of all, Birth of Venus could never. No, I don't want to see any Venus birth. Like, give me Julia looking at the ground in like the rain when the sun's like sort of setting. So do you want to tell listeners about like how you achieved that final shot?
Oh my God. We've made so many variations of album covers. I don't think people realize I'm bipolar and I'm like incredibly obsessive. So like when I start a project and like if I say yes to a project, I will obsess about it to like an unhinged level degree that like it's truly not even healthy. Like I'll think about it every day. I'll listen to that music every day. I'll wake up to that music. I'll go to sleep listening to that music. Like every second of my day is consumed thinking like, how can I visually represent this music? So that album art had so many different iterations and versions. And it was just hard too, because of the deadline we had, you know, because of COVID, all of the LP pressing deadlines are so behind. So like in order for you to get your album pressed on vinyl, you had to submit your artwork like 6 months in advance or you wouldn't make it for the release date, which meant that we're definitely rushing to make a deadline so they can have this thing done. And at some point I actually wanted to have done a CT brain scan of each band member and showing their brains on sugar. So it would literally be a head full of sugar and, you know, how sugar has the same effects on your brain as like cocaine or any other drug. Like you just got a high, a sugar high, but we couldn't get it done on time. I mean, we fucking tried so many different things. I think we did like 23 different covers before we landed on that. And we did that photo that ended up becoming the cover was actually just originally meant to be a promo shoot for them. So it was just meant as their promo photos. And we talked a lot about, you know, their influences for that album, for that record and the music they were making and the things they're feeling and how like New York City was this important, you know, thing to this particular music that they made during COVID. So we were shooting a lot around specific areas of New York that meant something to them, had something to do with the music. And I have a personal series that I've shot in Coney Island for like years now. I've never released a single photo from it, but I end up shooting a lot of projects that like just for myself and nobody ever sees. So like I had already shot that exact location, that exact frame, everything the same at that exact time. Many other times before I have that same photo that I've done like at least, I don't know, a dozen times over the years. And I'm very much like a lighting divas. Like I like shooting at dusk and like these weird specific times of the day. So we actually went back to that location twice. And just because like, you know, that is a really small window of like 15 minutes you have before it's too dark. So, you know, we shot it the first time around and I didn't feel like we walked out of there and then we had it. So I was like, let's just fucking go back and shoot it again. So we went back a second time, they dressed again and same clothes, same everything. And we shot it again. So we actually did it twice, just so my stupid obsessive bipolar brain could feel like, okay, we got something. So you knew we didn't really want to necessarily have them looking at the camera and posing too much. So it kind of was just like us hanging out in Coney Island and just enjoying the day. And somehow we ended up with that. It's really, like, it's not super conceptual. There isn't like much behind of it. I like to think it's a striking image. Like if I saw that record in a record store, I will pick it up to look at it, you know? So I'm happy with it. I think after all of the rounds of conceptual weird things that we tried, somehow that worked. I think when you look back in history, like the most iconic album covers, more often than not, they tend to be image-based and photography image type of album covers, just because they tend to age well. You know, like if you do some weird graphic design shit, you know, over time, technology changes, shit gets dated, stuff looks like very timed and dated really quickly. But something about photography, anytime you look at a good image as an album cover, chances are over time, it will age well.
Yeah. And what are like some of the most striking touchstones that have inspired your work visually that's like influenced your aesthetic?
Oh man, there's so many. I actually grew up watching movies. So my parents had a movie rental store, like a neighborhood type of like Blockbuster. I was this really unusual, odd kid who just didn't really like, I don't know, didn't really fit in, had a lot of friends. So like a lot of my time was spent being babysat by a TV and watching movies. And because we literally had VHS tapes on our living room, I could just go in, you know, watch movies all day. And I would just watch sometimes like 2 to 3 movies a day. And so cinema, I think, has been like the biggest thing for me for as long as I can think. All I ever wanted to do was make movies and be a director. I guess perhaps like the biggest inspirations and things like that or discoveries came to me through cinema, like watching my first Jodorowsky movie, as cliche as that is, or Tarkovsky, or you know, any of these like art house directors, always felt like a revelation. And even to this day, every time I watch a really good movie that I have never seen before, and either is like something new or old or obscure or big, every time I watch a really good movie, it's just kind of like, I don't know, it does things to me that kind of restores my faith in art all over again. And it kind of makes me fall in love with what I do all over again. And it makes me just work harder, want to work harder so I can hopefully one day make my own movies. Like, have you ever seen La Jetée and stuff like that? It's like a mix between, mm-hmm. I guess, video art and like filmmaking, or, you know, it exists in this odd like place where it doesn't really belong to any genre per se. I don't know. Or even like somebody like Chantal Ackerman, which, funny enough, for many years, like I used to hate Chantal Ackerman. I used to think she was so fucking boring. And I never understood the appeal. I always thought it was fucking pretentious and full of shit. And like anybody who name dropped Chantal Ackerman, I was always like, oh, this person's a fucking pretentious, like art school type of fucking kid. I can't stand it. It's fucking, you know, dumb and boring and like slow. And for whatever fucking reason, I have just had this like rediscovering completely like change of heart on Chantal Ackerman. And I've been, I don't know, like I do think some art you need to discover, or you need to find it, or it finds you. The art itself will find you at the right time so you can appreciate it. And I think when I was young, I didn't have enough life experience to understand the pain and the sorrow that she had within her. And I discovered that Chantal Ackerman was also bipolar. She had her first episode when she was 34. And something about that just made me like change my perspective on her art. And then I looked at it with completely different eyes. And it just felt like, oh my God, how had I never appreciated this before? I don't get it. So I don't even know what the fuck we're talking about anymore. But like, yeah, I feel like if I were to make any kind of movie these days, maybe that's the kind of movie maybe I'll end up making. I don't fucking know. I have no idea. Who knows?
Yeah, it's so funny how our understanding of things or our opinion changes once we get such a deeper look into the cultural context in which a lot of art was created.
Also just your own life experiences. You know what I mean? Like as you get older and you evolve as a human being and you go through life experiences that will be traumatizing and that will be life-changing and that will, you know, shape your perspective of the world around you and who you are and what society is and what life is and what all this bullshit means and the purpose of any of this stuff. That will completely change your relationship with the art that you are attracted to and what kind of art will have an impact in your life from there.
For sure. And you know what that reminds me of is I've been listening to this podcast where the hosts do a deep dive into Korn's discography, and they all start out being like the typical person who's like, oh, let's, okay, here's a funny joke, make a diversion. Okay, great. Now let's get back to talking about goddamn Korn. And then like, as they get further insight into everything, it's just like, oh God, are we starting to have a little bit of respect for Korn? Oh no.
Listen, I gotta say, like when I was like 14, 15, one of my favorite bands was fucking System of a Down. And I loved everything about System of a Down. And it was just that perfect band that was a mix of this cultural thing that felt so primal and like in your face that I had never heard of it before. Like it felt so alien and still felt it had so much political gravitas to it. And like it felt like such a transformative way to release my rage and anger at the world and a society at a time. And I gotta say, like, they still hold up to me. Like every time, every once in a while, fucking Toxic City comes up on my motherfucking shuffle. And I'm like, yo, stop all this Brian Eno nonsense. I need me some, you know, some fucking Season of a Down. Like, she's incredible. It's such powerful art. And I think, I don't know, sometimes people take for granted the shit that we like when we're teenagers.
Right.
I don't know. And I think a lot of this stuff, you know, gets looked at it through different lenses. And, you know, then there's nostalgia. And,
yeah,
you know, all of these things play a huge, you know, part on things becoming, you know, like you can now like Blink 182 unironically, or like I was surprised like how much fun I have listening to something as stupid as Limp Bizkit, which, you know, yes, I will go from Thelonious fucking Monk to Fred Durst. Like, it's so dumb. And like at the same time, like it's like there's no shame on just having fun. Like, I don't know. I think at the end of the day, it's all good. And I'm sure, you know, we're going to feel this way about whatever like art that we think is shitty now. Gen Z kids and younger kids of this generation are going to look at it and they're going to like have the time of their lives. Like the same way, like every time I'm in any place or any function, no matter how much of like some fucking pretentious art snob the person is, if fucking Ashanti and Ja Rule shit comes up, you better believe everybody will be getting down to like mesmerize and whatever. And it's like so dumb. And it's just because we grew up with that. So in a way, yeah, it just reminds people of a time when like, you know, like that was all you knew in life. Like you just had fun. And
yeah, even my mom thinks Mesmerize rips. Like I have this one memory that I'll never forget where my mom was driving and she was like, oh yeah, what's that Sex in the Car song? And I was like, oh my God. Okay, yeah. This is my life. Yeah. I mean, it's still, yeah.
How it is. I think it's cycles of nostalgia, you know, comes and goes. And like, I feel like every new generation who turns 30 years old, you're going to have art that was considered bad or in bad taste or just like whatever. It gets a second life as like, now you can appreciate in a non-ironic way. You can actually enjoy for the sake of fun and the good times mm-hmm. you had when you're a teenager.
Yes, absolutely. And once like the baggage gets removed from it, like the stigmatization of being an MCR fan in the early 2000s when the Daily Mail was calling you an emo terrorist and stuff like that. And parents were like, oh no.
I think that song, Elena, yeah. It's such a great fucking song. And that music video is incredible. I think it's one of the best music videos ever done.
Absolutely. Literally high art, the Helena music video. Like I follow that dancer on Instagram still. I forget her name, but she's amazing.
I feel like I can totally appreciate the beauty of fucking Nina Simone and still get down to Boxcar Racer or whatever, like shit that, you know, in my teenage years, I used to hold it to like high value.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, what are some of like your personal like nostalgia infused like obsessions right now?
I feel like I haven't honestly been looking a lot into like my past. Frankly, it's actually a lot of Brazilian music. Perhaps like in a strange way, I guess because I haven't been home in so many years, like I haven't gone back to visit Brazil in 8 years. And now I've reached that point where I spent more of my life living in America than I've living in Brazil, you know. And when I left, I was a teenager. So like most of my formative life experiences and like adulthood has been now spent in America. So I think I'm dealing with a lot of this weird like existential crisis where I feel very nostalgic for things that remind me of home. Even knowing when I lived home, I didn't like these things necessarily, you know, or I couldn't appreciate the beauty of them. But now every time something comes up or I listen to something, like it always hits me like at the right spot. I'm always like, oh gosh, like this is the perfect music or this. And that's another thing to be said about music is like, I just went to this concert for one of my favorite artists, a Brazilian artist called Milton Nascimento, which is this like Brazilian avant-garde artist, like Bjork loves him. Like, you know, anybody that's anyone interesting loves him, like Paul Simon. And I couldn't believe that like a song could somehow magically transport me to an afternoon at my grandma's house when I was 9 years old, eating her food. Like I could almost taste the food or smell it from listening to the song, which is so incredible. Like shit that I truly completely took it for granted. But because it was so common, like you listen to on a radio, on your parents' house, like it was just everywhere around you, you still know this stuff. And now you have a connection. Yeah. It's kind of bizarre.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. By the way, I heard a 1985 by Bowling for Soup the other day. And by the way, I also just learned the other day that it was an SR-71 cover. So my childhood is a scam, but like that song is so stupid. Like the whole gist of the song is basically 80s, but hearing it just come on randomly in my Apple library, I was transported back to my aunt's bedroom where me and my cousin would just jump and fall flat on our faces playing Chop Chop Timber while that song played in the background. And it's amazing what nostalgia can do.
Yeah. I mean, but at the same time, like I try to be very conscious, like for whatever reason, like, yes, some stuff comes up on the shuffle. Great. But I think it's so important to not lose sight of like cool things that are still happening and are coming out. Like,
yeah,
I think because we're so saturated with information and media, it becomes really easy to default to listening to the same shit you used to listen when you're young, just because it's common ground and you're familiar with. And also it has something to do with age. You know, I don't want to become one of those old people who are always like, in my time, music was better or art.
Back in my day.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think like there's always incredible shit being done, shit that we're not even expecting or that we are not even like ready for. Or, and there is more shit like that than ever. It just kind of takes more work to find it sometimes. And you just have to pay attention and do your research. But I think it's kind of important to like look up to the future a lot more sometimes than the past. And I say that, but like at the same time, there is so much really, really old art that I am still discovering. You know what I mean? Like, I guess I have a tendency of like there is always a new jazz album that I've never heard of that I can still listen and discover for the first time. Even somebody like Bob fucking Dylan, like I'm always shocked how somehow every year I discover a new Bob Dylan song that I had never heard of it before. It just feels like it never ends. I'll never get to the end of it and to the bottom of it. And I'm so grateful for. So it's kind of like I try to find a balance of like, I treat it almost like homework as well. You know what I mean? Where I try to tell myself like, oh, I'm going to learn about whatever. I don't know. Fucking Miles Davis or whoever. You know what I mean? Like, and I'm going to sit here and I'm going to read about it. Like, I've been really into Sly and the Family Stone lately, and or Funkadelic or people like that. And like, I want to sit there and I want to understand, and I might start reading the Wikipedia page, and then I get into the albums, and then I try to watch as many YouTube videos as I can. And it's sometimes, you know, it won't be as easy to appreciate or to understand. And there's a lot of value in that. Like, if you can sit with something, even if you don't understand, and try to understand where it's coming from, the thought process behind of it, the creative process behind of it, and then really sit with it and pay attention and let it do its thing. Sometimes it will grow on you. Sometimes it won't. Maybe you just solidifies your understanding that that shit isn't for you. But like, unless you put yourself through this educational process of learning art and discovering art, like, you also never get better as an artist. I also truly believe that in many ways, art finds you. You know what I mean? Like, there is this eerie, magical fucking thing of synchronicities that start showing, like, you sometimes when like something is meant for you, some kind of art is meant for you, you just start seeing it coming to you everywhere. Somebody will recommend it to you. The next thing you know, you're browsing some random shit online and that name pops up, or it comes up on the shuffle on your Spotify, or you're walking down the street and you see a flyer, like you see somebody talking about it, like it somehow it keeps on coming back in like a different place, different times, from different people, different directions. You keep on being hit with the same thing. And it's almost like the universe is trying to tell you, this is meant for you. And you should check it out. And I truly
love attraction.
Yes, I truly believe that's a thing. Like, some of the best art I discover, or some of my favorite art, like, you just kind of, I like to think I stumble upon it and I don't know how, but I do think it's kind of like the universe just sent it my way because it knew I needed it at that time. And it's really impressive how these things work sometimes. Like, good art that's meant for you will find its way to you. And somehow, just if you just start paying attention to the signs that are being sent in your direction, you see it's kind of calling you and it's out there. And also, like, if you like a musical genre or style, it's easy to also just then go into like, oh, what other music inspired the artists that I like, or what other directors were part of this movement? Like, I like Fluxus, who was part of that. You know what I mean? And like, we have Mercer Cunningham, we have Nanjun Park or Paik, I don't know how you say his name. Like, you have all these people. So like one thing leads to the other, and suddenly it's like this, almost like a spider web, like things just connect. And the next thing you know, you're just on it.
Yeah, it's like when Kurt Cobain was like, oh, I like that Meat Puppets. And then all of a sudden, all the major labels were like, sign the Meat Puppets.
Yeah, and like a lot of mainstream artists will eventually end up becoming your gateway drug to more obscure shit. Like, yeah, you got into Nirvana, then you Googled the "Hi, how are you, Daniel Johnston" t-shirt that Kurt Cobain was wearing in a photo. Next thing you know, now you're obsessed with Daniel Johnston. And, you know, so like a lot of artists, no matter how mainstream or big they are, like you can never discredit their power to become the gateway drug for something that is way weirder, obscure, experimental, confrontational, whatever the fuck you want to call it, avant-garde. You know, you do need these like little mainstream gateway drugs, because sometimes that's your initiation to the whole thing.
Yeah. And what's cool about a lot of the mainstream artists too, is that they were like, they were that person who was playing in like DIY hole in the walls for a period of time, like in camp with other artists. And then like, so, and like eventually like one group or maybe two in those camps got lucky and got on MTV or something like that.
With mainstream media these days, it's so different. Like, I don't think we'll ever be able to, you know, to really have artists be that big anymore, just because of the way the media is consumed. And, you know, there isn't like,
there's so much out there now.
Right. There isn't like MTV. Yeah. There isn't like one outlet. There isn't one corporation now that dictates what's cool and what's not, what's, you know, top of charts or whatever. Like, yeah, you still kind of have people who like manage to do that, but like not to that extent. And also, you know, I feel like this is a tricky subject because Kanye is like such a mess right now. And as a bipolar person who's also known him, worked with him, I have so much compassion. And, you know, I don't even want to like comment on it, but I think for every little hype beast kid who perhaps just discover Arthur Russell because they listen to Kanye's like 30 Days and 30 Out, like a song like that, or discovered like Kim Crimson from a sample, or you know what I mean? Like some like shit like that. And like, I think that shit is also so valid. And I think it's important like not to gatekeep good art. You know how sometimes like people are like, oh, Kate Bush got popular on TikTok. Like, that's my favorite music. I hate these kids listening to fucking Kate Bush on a soundtrack of some show. And it's like,
yeah,
let fucking kids discover good art. Like, they need that. Like, yes, I want kids to discover Neil Young. Put that shit back on Spotify. I want people, you know what I mean? Like, I appreciate his like stand his instance, but like put fucking Johnny Mitchell back on that shit. Like, I think kids need to listen to Blue from beginning to end and fall in love with that.
Yeah, that's how a lot of kids, and like the modern forms of consumption now, like TikTok or something, like Julia said in your talk, TikTok is somebody's record store now, and who are we to gatekeep that, you know?
Or I gotta say, I've been, like I said, I've been off of Instagram for like 2 years now. And I recently got a TikTok that is like a secret TikTok. It's a hidden TikTok. It's not really a thing, like just for myself, just because so many of these record labels I was working with, you know, were talking to me about TikTok. So I kind of wanted to understand what it was. Like, at first I was very resistant. It's like, I think it's stupid, whatever. I don't have time for this Gen Z bullshit. And then eventually I was like, you know, let me sit my ass down, just like get a sense of how this thing works. And I am baffled and truthfully also scared of how tight that algorithm fucking is. I discover now so much amazing music through TikTok from recommendations of other people who just also like obscure ass fucking shit and psychedelic fucking music and like ambient Japanese ambient music and like shit like that. Shit that I thought like, oh, maybe me and like 300 other people know about this. And then like, I get that recommended to me and I'm like, how the fuck this kid knows about this? And also they're young. Yeah. And it always like shocks me. And I, you know, it's not even just through the little snippet of the song. Like, literally people will talk like they are in a record store recommending you. If you went to the record store and you talked to an employee, they'll tell you, this is a great album, buy this, like, this is cool. Like, that's the most interesting aspect that I think people, like other like millennial musicians perhaps are taking for granted, is that like, never mind that like having to have a social media presence and be active marketing in every social media platform. I know that's exhausting. But the actual discoverability, I don't know if that's a word, but like there is something, I don't know. I do discover so much amazing music through TikTok now. And it truly does feel like I am walking into a record store and I'm getting tips and recommendations from other music nerds who just like this shit and have a weird taste. And I haven't gotten a bad recommendation yet. Like I immediately go out and I Google the people they say, and I go on Spotify and I listen to that, and it's like mind fucking blowing. So I think like platforms like that are actually really powerful. So if people like learn and understand how to use it, like I think it's still new, and I think people are still going to figure it out ways to innovate and make it even more interesting in ways we're not even expecting. I think this could be a really interesting platform for artists.
Yeah. For sure. It's always so cool when like people are just on there and just like discovering shit organically. And also, I feel like in a way it might even be more accessible for a lot of younger kids, especially like young queer people and or self-identified women, because a lot of record stores feel like a very old guard gatekeepy boys club. And some of us feel uncomfortable in those spaces. So, but online, you're just like, you have access to a whole world of stuff and you're connecting with other people who look like you as well.
But I feel like to me, the real kick is actually connecting with people who are completely different from me. Comes from different parts of the world that I could never imagine. Like, yes, I want to know what somebody in fucking Ethiopia is listening to and what they fucking think is cool. Because chances are it's something I would have never imagined. And I would have never come across if it wasn't for the fact that we crossed paths on this random ass fucking app. And mm-hmm. I think that's what's so cool to me. Like, never mind people who are like me. Because then you end up falling into this like echo chamber. No, right. I mean, you're just like going around, like kind of like not really discovering anything, but just kind of like listening to your thoughts over and over, repeated to yourself through your peers. I love knowing that I can come across somebody from fucking Sri Lanka with a fucking lit ass track that I would have never imagined in a million years. And it comes recommended to me and I'm like, God damn it, this shit is fire. Let me go listen to some Bangladeshi fucking music or whatever, like some completely unexpected shit like that.
Right. I discovered this site recently where you can view like every sort of demographic and every like conceivable genre everyone in different age demographics and countries all over the world are listening to.
Oh my God, it's like this radio app, right? What is the name again? It's called Radio with like a bunch of O's. No, that's the one I have. Ooh, like that's something similar.
That sounds cool. I'm definitely gonna look at that Radio.
A bunch of O's in the end. It's kind of like a global time machine of music throughout like completely yeah. different centuries and different every single country, and they just somehow have it. It's fucking incredible. I feel like it's the kind of app that like, it's not like I'm gonna be sitting home on board, like I'm gonna fucking open and scroll, you know what I mean? Like it's one of those things, right? That like it's more like almost ephemera. Like, yeah, it's a cool concept, but I don't know how much time people actually spend using it. But whoever the fuck put it together, props to them. It is brilliant.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know where I found this site that I'm referring to that I can't remember the name of? Oh, I think I found it. I think I found it. Every Noise at Once. That's it. I found it.
Every Noise at Once. I don't think I know that. I got to Google. I'm going to open a tab right now on my computer. Yeah. I can look.
And they have like different sections where you can open like different subcategories of age demographics, countries, and you can pull like
this is incredible. That this is very similar to this other app I just told you. I think the difference is that the other one is you can do it also by date and year. You know what I mean? Like you can go as far back as like, I don't know, they say it whenever recording sound was discovered in a lot of these countries. And what they have it is a map. It's literally a globe, a world map. So you click on the country and you can zoom in geographically and then like get really insight into like, oh yes, here's all music from Brazil, but this is what music sounds like in Rio de Janeiro versus in São Paulo. And this is what music sounded all across different states and cities and get really local, which I think is so fascinating.
Yeah, I'm on the site right now. And yeah, wow. This is like a whole like rabbit hole, like, oh wow, there's the math.
Like whoever the fuck put it together is brilliant. But this one that you sent is really cool too. I'm looking at it right now and like it's kind of amazing. So it's mostly like musical genres, right? I kind of love how chaotic the way it's just listed.
For sure.
It's really impressive. It's kind of overwhelming, but fucking cool. I love the randomness aspect of it. You can just kind of click on anything and I bet you it's like interesting.
Yeah, and they have like
a spider web of fucking shit.
Yeah. It's just, yeah, it's unbelievable like what technology allows us to like the discoverability of everything, like you said. And
right? As overwhelming as it is, I feel like we are so bombarded by fucking information now. It's sometimes it's hard to find the time or the attention span to sit there and actually enjoy or appreciate any of these things. Like I actually wish I had nothing else that I could sit here and spend, you know, 3 days obsessing about a website like this, which I feel like is something I used to do when I was a teenager, you know, because there wasn't as I wasn't being bombarded with as much information online. Nowadays it's hard, but it is incredible.
Yes, for sure. And I guess for my last question before I let you go, what are some of the best, coolest live music events you've been to recently?
I don't know. Gotta think. Tried to think actually what was even the last live music thing I saw. Because like I feel like I work with music also, like I don't necessarily consider, because like it's become my job if I'm shooting or if I'm just there with an art, whatever, like I don't necessarily feel like I get to enjoy as much because it's a job, if that makes any sense. So I'm trying to think. I mean, I just did go see Milton Nascimento, the Brazilian artist. So like that to me was really fucking cool. That's his last tour. He's really sick. He's like super old. He's never going to play again. So I feel as if every single person on that audience was like connected and dialed because we know this is like a once in a lifetime last chance to see this like iconic legend. So like that was cool. But I'm like in many ways it was also a very traditional concert per se. I gotta say, I did go see the last thing maybe I saw that truly like kind of melted my face a little and I was really excited, but I'm biased because I've always liked his shit. I did go to see Arthur Lindsay. I don't know if you know him. He used to be on this band called DNA and like all the wave downtown New York shit.
Yeah.
I am obsessed with that whole wave of art, like all those artists, all those people, and like Arto is so fucking cool. And like, I've never seen an Arto Lindsay guitar solo that I didn't like. Like, it's so, I don't know. Like, if I were to be a guitar player, that is the guitar player I wish I could be, which I probably could. Cause, and that's the thing, he makes it look so effortless. Like, he's just out there making weird ass fucking sound. Like, he doesn't know what he's doing, but you know that he knows. It's actually a lot harder to deconstruct and make sound and make that sound good and interesting and appealing. You know, sometimes I guess making a melody, chord progressions, whatever, working with a structure, you know, sound. It's easier because you have something to pull from. But when you're working in this abstract noise experimental way, it's kind of harder to fucking make shit that's gonna really grab you and make you be like, what the fuck? So Art and Lindsay was amazing. And it was like a tiny ass little room. I don't even think they had 100 people in this room. And again, it's like one of those artists that's kind of like Jonathan Richman, where he's still out there doing his thing, didn't sell out, fucking raging as hard as ever, and has its cult following. And I was actually very pleasantly surprised at like the incredible diversity and mix of people in the audience as far as like age groups and races. There wasn't a lot of women, unfortunately. I feel like, unfortunately, this territory of like experimental, more gearheads tends to be like a very bro-centric universe.
Yeah.
I think he makes incredibly sensible music. And like, he's actually produced a lot of incredible Brazilian musicians, and most of them women, in fact. So like, he just has something very special and unusual. Like the way he brains works is interesting to me. But I think that stuff actually, it should be so, it is, I find it very accessible as a woman to like get into it.
Yeah.
I think for whatever reason, it's not, I don't know. I personally don't find it intimidating having to like go into a room like that. And like, I find it like, I've always been comfortable and like, perhaps because I've always been abrasive, like I can stand my ground with the bros and I never had an issue with that. But also they weren't even like, they weren't even like the gatekeeping type of bros. Like they're super engaged. They want to talk to you. Like they want you to discover, like there is a common thread that we all like this guy. And I just don't know why there were more women there. You know, again, that was the first and only concert I've ever seen of him. Perhaps it's different in other places, but I don't know. Like Art and Lindsay really kind of blew my mind. It was really fucking good.
Yeah, that's really cool. I haven't listened to much DNA, but I really love, like, I guess just the...
Get into his solo stuff.
Yeah.
The solo stuff is what's really fucking good. And watch some YouTube videos. Like, once you fucking watch that, it's some of the most punk rock fucking shit I've ever seen. To this day, it still feels like some of the most punk rock shit. And to this day, people don't get it. People think it's just like... this fucking old man is out here just scratching that fucking guitar, making random ass sound. That's not music. That's just some fucking like noise. And it's like, no, bro. It's like actually a lot harder to do what he's doing than like structured type of shit. Like you almost need to learn so much of the process to deconstruct the process. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Who's the painter? I think is it Miró, João Miró, I think that's how you say he's Spanish, I think. I'm so bad with people saying people's names. I feel like I butcher everybody's fucking names with my accent. But, you know, he does the almost like childlike abstract little figures and paintings. And he always said that, like, in order for him to do that, he had to be so good at painting. He can, you know, actually paint the shit out of anything. He can do very realistic things, but like he had to learn all about and master that craft so he could then fucking deconstruct and reinvent and make it seem childlike.
Like the people criticizing it like that, like, oh, a 10-year-old could do, okay, well, you're not 10 years old, could you?
Like, correct. And it's because I think, you know, people sometimes disregard how much work it takes to fucking master something just to fucking completely destroy it and, you know, pull it apart and make something new out of it, and or, you know, desensitize it to like the essence or whatever, like just make it this, you know, reinvent it in ways that I guess we didn't know before.
For sure. Yeah, it reminds me of like Diamanda Galás, like doing the Avina Cava series, and people who might not like understand the way she goes off kilter like that, like you need to have the right operatic technique in order to do that, like to
and I think this is also like a lesson that you can take it to absolutely any artistic discipline. Like no matter what is your art practice, if you approach it from let me do everything I can to be as good as I can and like master this thing to the best of my abilities. And then once you have an understanding of the inner works and the structures and whatever of this thing, then you can really sit with it and be like, okay, how can I now take this thing to the next level? How can I apply whatever it is that I know and somehow reinvent this technique and make it new and fresh again? And then once you have all these artistic values defined, you can just take this formula you created and fucking end up with a result that, I don't know, that no one has landed on it before.
For sure. Yeah. I feel like in 10 hours, we're still going to be talking and I'm just going to be like, Drea, you have to go shoot a concert. Like,
I know.
There's going to be bags under
our eyes. I know. I talk way too much. Edit my stupid ass down.
Oh, no worries. I had a blast talking to you, which is exactly why I wanted to have you on here.
I'm glad we're able to make time. I know I feel like I kept on having to change dates. So I'm glad we're able to make this work today.
Same here.
Thank you so much for listening to Sounding Out with Izzy. And thank you again to Drielli for joining me this episode.
Remember to subscribe and sign up for the mailing list on my YouTube channel and written blog, both under the name A Girl's Two Sound Sense. Give the podcast a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're interested, consider donating to my Patreon at patreon.com/agirlstwosoundsense. That's girl with 3 R's and no I. Thank you so much for listening, and I will catch you in the next episode of Sounding Out with Izzy.